What I've done here is really simple, and I've just taken some of the great summary work that was already done and basically copied and reused that and added a little value to it. So what we did is we took each of the studies in our Beagle Dog Archive and we put the red and gray book summaries if they existed on there. We'd like to include contact info for the original authors so that if somebody's looking at a study, they can contact that. I know that was included in the original IRA's gray book, but I don't know how up to date that is. The big advantage is, like I said, you can anybody in the community can edit, so if anybody is interested in a particular study or if people publish new data on a study, they can continue to put it up there as opposed to a closed and fixed document. And finally, you don't have to learn a new username. I know that's always annoying to have to log into things. So here's an example page I put together, and you can see we have just a straight copy of the Red Book summary and the Gray Book summary. Then here's a list of the A&L reports that it cites, and we're filling in links to each of those as they come up. So now there's just a little value added to that. We have links to the papers online, and we have links to where you can find the data on our website. So I think you can think of this just as an extension of that summary work that adds a little bit of interlinking and makes the utilities that they reference more accessible. You can contribute. If you want to contribute the really easy way to the wiki, just email us. We'll put it up. If you have ideas, if you have stuff you want to contribute, email us at iarchive@gmail.com. We'll put it up. You don't have to learn anything. If you want to get involved in archiving and kind of building up your legacy, if this is a tool that's going to be used outside of just our lab, there's about six syntax rules you need to learn to use a wiki effectively. For the most part, it's WYSIWYG, which stands for what you see is what you get. That means if you can edit it pretty naturally. However, if you want to do things, make lists, tables, headers, links, you need to learn these few special syntax rules. It's not hard, but it takes a little bit. People have concerns with wikis, and I think those concerns are valid. One of the major concerns is that everybody has permission to edit, and related to that is that they might do vandalizing things to the data. We can actually control that. First of all, if permission becomes a really big problem, we can put usernames on it. If it becomes a community resource and people are abusing it, we can add usernames. In terms of vandalism, it's actually pretty self-regulating, and it works pretty well. I have a RSS feed. I can keep track of every change that happens to the wiki right now, and since I make all the changes, I know if there's anything else, it's probably vandalism. But there hasn't been any so far. But the point is that the contributors can keep track of how documents are changing. Everybody has access to that, and so anybody can come around and, I guess, keep it clean. So if it becomes a community resource, the community will keep it clean as well. The biggest concern from my end is just to have a critical mass of contributors. It will be a useful utility even if we just use the wiki within our own lab, but it will be the most useful if we take some of the people who are continuing to do work on the studies and build this up as a community or as a community resource for them. And that would be really a wonderful dream for me for keeping this RCAP going. We're going to do more stuff with this. We're going to put all the Janus studies on there. Ray's going to help us out with acquiring the tissues from Albuquerque. I think some Utah tissues are there as well. We already have the Lovelace reports online, but we'll take the summary data and we'll link those in, so it'll be pretty easy for users to go from a summary of a study to the original reports to the data and so on. You can contribute. You can join, add to the wiki. I'll send out links to join the listserv for anybody that's interested in that. And I think this will be a really nice community resource. So I want to thank everybody in this room for the contributions to the archive. I want to thank Gail for giving me a job. Thanks, guys. If there are any questions, I'll take them.
One thing is, will you make sure that you send all the email addresses, wiki information, and stuff out to everybody on the email list for this meeting?
Yeah, I will absolutely do that.
I think being one of the other issues with anything going online is quality control. You know, so it can be garbage in, garbage out.
Yeah.
How are you sort of thinking about dealing with that, or how have you dealt with it so far?
Well, you know, I think that's a continuous process, right? I think from our end, when we first acquire an archive, we don't know what the heck's going on with it, right? And so the first thing we do is start digging through data, and we post what we have, but then over time we add stuff. And what happens is our need to understand the data And to get back to original sources is really driven by the people who end up using it. And so when somebody's using it for statistics, all of a sudden that'll drop a question of, well, how do we really know this? And so I think it builds a nice feedback cycle. When users are actually getting into this, then you learn more about it. And also the things that you learned actually matter to the people who end up using them. Yeah, Delaney?
So will the databases be online also, and how will that work?
Well, the databases...
Or will they be linked?
Yeah, the databases are already online for our Janus Mouse study, for the Beagle Dog study. They will be online for the Albuquerque information as we get it in Utah. They're not on the wiki. They're not editable. We link to them. So we say, if you want all the results of the study, here's the link. I think there's good reason for that. I think the vandalism issue is a big deal, and I think it's one thing if quality control is at the level of, you know, summary reports, but it's a different thing if quality control is at the level of, like, the actual data about animals. So that, does that answer your question?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah.
So I was just curious about, as this continues to grow, how many people does it take to keep this running?
Well, it takes me right now, right? And it's already useful. I think it's a good idea because it scales. And so it's useful for us just to organize the students that we bring through lab and introduce them to our own studies and archive material as we get it. If more users come on board, more people will be paying attention to it and helping. But at any scale, I think it's going to be useful.
So when you talk about other people getting involved, you're thinking of it not just in Chicago, but all around? Or
yeah, I think all around. I think even outside the purview of Beagle work, I think this would be a good resource for the radio biology community, especially because we have such great work that's already been started, and this kind of adds value on top of that. So I think it's a natural fit in that way.
And how long is your contract?
I don't know. TL, what's our contract?
Day to day.
Yeah.
Then why don't you mention something about the interactions with Europeans as well?
Oh, yeah, I didn't get to this, but some of you may know that the STOR effort, the ERA is funding the STOR effort. We've been in talks with some of the people, and actually kind of my doppelganger over there in Britain who's working on putting their databases online. We built some interactive web services between us, and so now our two databases talk to each other. He had a little information, summary reports about the studies that we didn't know, and we had information about individual animals that they didn't know. Now our databases crosstalk, and the more people get involved with that, the more useful it'll become. Oh, yeah, please.
This is really tangential, and in part maybe it's come up when I've had to step out of the room and some other business. But it's an important issue that I think the group here should address, and that is the fact that these studies were done with beagle dogs and the broader issue of the use of animals in research. And there is obviously a very significant community. Many of us who were involved in conducting these studies knew that we weren't loved and respected by all members of society. There are those who thought we were real demons for doing these kinds of studies and using beagle dogs. I think it's very important for all of the individuals who use this information and are involved in this now to have an appreciation of those issues. And I say that especially because we now see a broader group of individuals participating that were not participants originally, people who come from different scientific disciplines. May not have really the same degree of appreciation of being in the firing line when you, one of your concerns every day, certainly mine when I was managing a research laboratory, was what if in terms of a telephone call, a press coverage, you name it. So that's the statement of concern. The specifics are, I think that it would be well for some of you who are active in this to actually put together a very specific plan in terms of how it is you'll respond if somebody should start to attack this, and putting this information up like it is now is going to provide a real basis for anybody who wants to come in and start to raise hell. So I think if you do not already have that kind of a contingency plan, what do you do? It's very important that you set about getting that done now. That would be my first priority of everything that's been discussed that needs to be put in place.
I think Gail has a really excellent.
Well, so what we this has obviously come up along the way, and there are a number of things that we can say about it. Number one, DOE uses this program to sell the fact that they don't have to do new animals. So in fact, you know, because the documentation was so good, because the tissues were preserved so well, it actually reduces animal usage required after this. So they're using it to say, we're using archives, and therefore we don't need to use as many animals as we would have otherwise.
Well, have you taken these people to trial yet? These demons, these people who did these studies. You know, I'll role play with you. You know.
Right,
so
right.
I hear what you're saying,
no,
Gail.
But I mean,
I've heard that, Gail. Let me just speak. Is this written down?
Yeah, I've actually written documentation for DOE. I've written.
No, I don't
pages.
Care about DOE. How, if I write to the Chicago Tribune tomorrow, and in that I write a very incendiary note about the activities of Northwestern University now collaborating with the Department of Energy, who we know we can't trust, and with these people at these other laboratories, all who are hired thugs living off of the government, and they should be punished. What are you doing to do that? And here are the names. W.J. Baer, Richland, Washington, Roger O. McClellan, Albuquerque, New Mexico, Marvin Goldman.
So
I'm asking you to put in place a written plan as to how you respond, and don't give me a bunch of junk about, well, DOE, because they're at the bottom of the trust list. So you have to be prepared.
But let me comment on that. I mean, you know, Northwestern has been dealing with animal issues for a very long time. We have a campus in the middle of downtown Chicago where animal rights people could come in. We have a very secured area, and in fact, the tissues are currently stored in animal facilities. Honestly, I dealt with animal rights people before, and nobody has ever made an issue about the use of tissues from archived animals before. They seem to be buying the argument that the experiments are already done.
No, so, you're missing it. That you know, and I can make all those arguments, but you also, you now, we are bequesting to you our legacy. We invested our lifetime career in this, and I would prefer that when those things happen, you be prepared to deal with it, so that I don't have
I will talk to our legal people and also our animal care people to make sure that there are that issue is taken care of. I've written myself a note,
but
I haven't experienced it so far yet.
No, but and you won't. You see, I mean, but this is it provides an easy vehicle for individuals who want to raise hell to identify who it is that they should go after, in terms of, you know, Marv Goldman, Bill Baer, myself.
It's going to happen. It has happened.
Yeah. And so I'm just asking you to prepare that written contingency plan, do some role playing in terms of who is coming, pick out some of your, you know, perhaps nastiest graduate students, say role play, you know. You tell me what it is you'd do if you wanted to raise hell. And then I'll have to make certain my contingency plan takes that into account. It's a very important issue. I mean, it's one that, you know, quite frankly, I might have, in today's environment, thought twice about whether I would have something called the Beagle Dog Data Congress in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Yeah.
In fact, I probably wouldn't have identified it that way because my level of sensitivity, I would have put some broader name on it. No use trying to fan the fires when you don't have to.
I think we have some more thoughts on that, over here.
Yeah, actually, Roger, I think that's an excellent point, and it's real. Whether we like it or not, it's there. And I will tell you that, we use non-human primates at Maryland, and we have as many as 200, 250 non-human primates there at any given time. Those are sensitive, but they're not as sensitive as an animal like a dog that is a pet animal. We have made the decision that we will not conduct those experiments in downtown Baltimore. Will not. I would have to ask the question in terms of the database, and I know there is always a desire to open everything up and make everything as transparent as we possibly can, and to make it accessible to the entire public. Is that really necessary to do?
Can you password protect
it? Is it can you give out? Can there be a password protected entry into the database that you get to control?
So I've dealt with both DOE and NIH on this issue, and it is possible. We can certainly set up a password protected site. Mostly, it's been used by a very small group of people, so we haven't gone to that point. I've not yet experienced problems with animal rights activists associated with it. Both NIH and DOE are actually really pushing totally open databases. This work was paid for by the federal government, and therefore it should be available to people. And that's the sort of argument that they use for it. I'm not averse to going after a passworded site if it's needed. I haven't seen a need yet, but as this expands, that might be necessary.
Yeah, and I understand, again, it's public funding, and so you want to make it available to the public. At the same time, our data is not available to the public in our laboratory until we put it out into some public forum. It's not. If somebody wants to see our data, well, it's restricted. It's always easier to start off in a more restricted manner and then to open it up more than it is to go the other way. Once it's open to everyone and it falls into the hands of someone who wants to make an issue of it, it's not that you can't defend, but it probably does mean that Northwestern and everyone who is associated with the project is going to get bad press and, possibly things that are even more legalistic thrown at them.
Let me just comment, though. I mean, yeah. Right now there's a ton of raw data out on websites, okay? NIH has set up data on animals from gene chip array experiments where animals have been sacrificed, and you can see, thousands and thousands of tissues that are looking at animals, and there has not been, and to my knowledge, there is not. I've actually inquired.
These dogs?
There are dogs in there. There are cats. There are pigs. I mean, it's virtually any animal that has been really very well studied. It's out there. I mean, we've actually looked at the dog gene expression arrays to try to compare it to some of the stuff that we've done. So, and that's a requirement of NIH now, is that your raw data for those sorts of studies must actually be loaded up on a website. So
now, whose website is that?
I'll send you links if you want. I don't remember.
Yeah, I mean, are these NIH controlled websites?
No. Some of them are journal controlled. Some of them are not. Some of them are not. Are just individual websites. So while I have an extreme sensitivity to, I mean, I have a dog. I mean, I have extreme sensitivity to many of these issues. I also don't want to jump the gun, and believe me, it's really easy for us to password. I mean, Ben, what would it take to put a password?
I mean, yeah, that's like a two-day project.
Yeah.
Now that doesn't, you're not operating under a secure socket layer or anything like that right now, I'm sure.
No, we're
this
not
is,
doing it.
So, yeah, and I don't know if you would have to introduce that, put some bare sign.
I can do HTTPS, too.
Okay.
That's another two-day project.
Okay.
I know how to do that.
And again, I don't know. It's I think I've always found it easier to err on the side of caution and then open and become, you know, more open after that than going the other way. But
so let me just. Our problem has been that there aren't that many people that are using it. So I mean, honestly, Ben, I mean, how many outside of our own lab group and maybe two other groups, there are not
that. Yeah, we've gotten like two contacts, maybe.
Right. I mean, there are hardly any people using it, so that's why we haven't felt the need to. I mean, we're actually trying to advertise it so more and more people use it.
Yeah, I just looked up on my BlackBerry. I looked up your Google groups, and there's one number right now, right?
Me, yeah. I mean, I just set it up, yeah. I set it up for this conference.
I'd just like to make a point about this, and really we're not talking about the data. We're talking about the investigators. Because what's really at risk here is not just the reputation, but their families. And it's the protection of that I think you're addressing, Roger. Not the data, not even anything about this conference. It's really about the participants, the funding organizations. The vulnerabilities are, where will a person take vengeance, take attack, take action? They could take action on the website. It's protected. You have it backed up. It could take it at the site. I mean, that's a vulnerable site. It's not all that well protected. And I think that's a big vulnerability per se. But the main thing is to just address the funding agencies or the people who are responsible for it, your names, the names of individuals. Now, all of that's in the literature, of course. If somebody really goes and directs a lot of attention to this, they'll weed down and find everybody and probably find out where they live today. But that's not, you do want to make it hard, and you're not going to make it impervious. I mean, we are all public figures. We all have our names out there, and that's just the fact of life now. But the question is, what is the vulnerability does this site bring to anyone who is new to the risk?
I just want to comment on that. We've had a long talk this morning about risk assessment, and I wonder if anybody has a quantitative idea of how dangerous it is to be doing animal studies.
It's probably less than that mythical one in a million, but no, every day. I tell you, a very good friend, colleague, trained with us, is a major figure in a national contract research organization. That particular individual typically has two bodyguards assigned to her. That firm has a sufficient degree of concern for that individual's well-being that's the situation. I have good friends who have senior positions in terms of pharmaceutical companies. In terms of the UK, their companies have made substantial investments in terms of security for their homes, and they have security details in terms of their children, and they all have written security plans in terms of protecting these individuals. This is real. I mean, every time I'm involved in something sort of on a national scene, I can count on getting two or three emails, and sometimes they're really wacky. You don't know where they came from, but somebody knows a lot about my past in details, and I've had those with regard to being the guy who directed those nasty beagle dog studies out in the desert in the super secret facilities in New Mexico. So these people are there on it. And as you said, this increased sort of public awareness on this and potential sort of advertising in today's world, it just all comes together. And so people very quickly can, you know, I suspect probably within an hour of have it calculated, there were 15,000 beagle dogs. Did you know that? 15,000 beagle dogs that were purposefully gassed. And, you know, these people are masters at the maliciousness of this. So I'm just asking you, put these together and...
Yeah, Roger, I hear your issue, and I will do something about it. Let me talk to both legal people and some of our computer people and see what they recommend as being the best approach.
And then you, as a responsibility, you have to put together that written contingency plan so you know how to deal with these. If the crap hits the fan on it, You know, when I ran the laboratory in New Mexico, I had typically in my performance evaluation, there were 10 points. The first point is do nothing that shall impact the Lovelace Medical Center. I knew what that meant. That was code word for do not do anything that brings adverse publicity and impacts the patient flow and the revenue of the medical center. That was number one. To add a little levity to this, I'll tell you a little story, and then that'll be my last story of the day, probably. We did work with monkeys in addition to beagle dogs. And, you know, people did not, they enjoyed, I think, coming to my office to BS on weekends or evenings. They did not like to pay a visit to my office to give me bad news, i.e. we just washed two rats in the cage washer or whatever. This day, the individual came and said, I'm sorry I didn't come over yesterday, but I thought we were going to catch them. And I said, catch what? Well, I was going to catch the monkeys. Well, what happened? The monkeys got out. There's only two that stayed behind. How many are we missing? Well, I think there were 15. How did they get out? Well, there's one of them is really smart, and he must have figured out how to get out of his cage, and then he got out the others, and then he got out the master door. What? You know, I said, well, you damn well better catch him in a hurry before we have the press on this. So they said, well, we're doing everything we can. We put out feed, and we're trying to attract them back. So I said about, I contacted our lawyers, and I said, you know, I want to get rid of those damn monkeys. I want to give them to the University of New Mexico when we catch them. So draw up the papers. So we got papers drawn up, and we gifted the monkeys. We didn't worry about the fact they were government property. We just gifted them to the University of New Mexico. Nothing happened, and, you know, they're looking. It's kind of like the alligator story. They're looking. Finally, a truck driver over the other side of the mountains, more than 10 miles away, he comes around a curve, and lo and behold, you know, he's not certain whether it's last night's libation. There's a monkey in the middle of the road. Well, he kind of liked the monkey, so he started feeding him. Yeah, pretty soon, there's two or three of them. So at that point, the word got out, and we had the opportunity to put our gift agreement in place. But we first had to catch them. So the university, of course, it's their monkeys. I've given them to them. So, of course, they wanted some publicity. University always want publicity. So they're going to record the capture. So they get the Fish and Wildlife Service involved. And so they fish, and the Wildlife Service go out and say, just like geese, you know. We're gonna band them. So they put out all the bananas and peanuts and whatever. Of course, they had all three TV stations there. And then they fired off the cannons and went, all the monkeys were gathered in there eating the bananas and whatever. Well, as soon as the cannons went off, whoa, they're gone. So they recorded the lack of capture of the Finally, they got them all, and they went into exile, if you will, at the University of New Mexico Ranch below Los Alamos. And every time I'd pay a visit to Senator Domenici in Washington, he'd say, well, Roger, how you doing on the monkeys? I said, they're not my monkeys, Pete, the university. So, you know, we didn't get real serious adverse publicity out of that. And so strange things happen.
Chuck, you've been up for a while.
I was going to say that as far as I know, the European parallel database does require a password. And when I've listened to this discussion for 30 years, and we never put it out when we had the data. The plan was you would ask us and we would vet you. We would decide if you were a scientist or not. And we had a nice plan. Luckily, we didn't have to do it. Nobody asked, so... So it is a little spooky putting it totally out there.
Scott?
Just simple comments. Peter is alive and well. He just arrested a guy in Salt Lake today that had burned down the store the other day. And our faculty members...
Can't hear you.
I have it on.
It's not on.
It's not working.
Here.
It's got a red light.
Yeah.
It's got a red light on, but okay. So I was just saying, PETA's alive and well. I have a hate file, an active hate file of letters over the years that we've received. But anyway, the question I really have is there going to be an attempt to try to immortalize this database? I have a collection of old databases, including one on magnetic tape of Chuck's, that I have the tapes but no longer the reader. But is there going to be any way to try to get this to the NTIS or to some agency that might help preserve this?
Yeah, we have multiple backups, but I think that's an excellent idea.
Yeah,
I think this is the problem that
Dan's had with his database. We had it with our Techa River database at Utah. It just all of a sudden one day vanished.
Well, we have multiple copies in multiple locations, but I think you're right.
I have multiple.
These are different databases. Is this a different database than we have, right? What you're talking about.
I'm just saying, I'm old enough to have seen a lot of databases come and go. And the best database I think I have is in the bookshelves of dead faculty members, where the real records are. So the issue is there going to be an attempt to immortalize it through some agency where they will, or a library where they'll guarantee preservation? Because I've got Chuck's database in probably five different formats that I can't use any longer.
Yeah, it's been discussed, and the problem is, I believe that until the database is used more, I don't think I'm going to be able to convince anybody to be willing to immortalize it. I would love to do that. I think it's important. But at this point in time, I don't think it's likely. Okay. 5 years from now, if it becomes a booming database that lots of people are using, I think there might be some hope.
I think that Gail's exactly right. It's going to take some funding. That's not easy. One of the questions I would have is the databases are coming in from different places. Are they the same? Are you going to use a third-party database to read it into Access or whatever? If you're going to make it a more permanent kind of thing, I would be certainly looking at a more robust database than Access. I really would. And again, I haven't had time to talk with you about the hardware setup that you have. This is one of the things that I do.
We should talk.
Yeah, we should talk. But Access, it does not have the security features that, say, an Oracle or something like that. But in terms of immortalization, I believe that when I was out here at PNL in November, that they actually, and this is a big project, but they were actually reading in out of the database into ASCII 2 format, such that ASCII 2 you're always going to be able to read. I used to use a program called Kermit. Did anybody use that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a long time ago. That you could read you could assign your delimiters and you could read almost anything. But those are the sorts of things that I think that you really need to be talking about. And if you were going to have a plan to make an immortalized database, that it would have to be, and ASCII 2 is universal. And so your issue, I don't think that's ever going to go away. And even though the Access or Oracle, it could fail, I guess. It seems unlikely in the near future. But for a long, long time, if you're talking about to store this data for forever, then I think those are the sorts of measures that you've got to think about.
I just want to be clear, and I think you're right, that we have the data in ASCII 2. It came with the archive,
okay.
And we ported it to MySQL.
In PNL,
so
from PNL.
From Argon.
Okay,
yeah.
Great. Yeah.
So we have it in ASCII 2, we have it in MySQL, and we have it in Access, and those are backed up in multiple locations. So we're not naive, although I think
Good.
We can certainly do better. Let's see.
And
Bill Blair,
what about data coming from Loveless?
We have no idea. We haven't seen it yet.
Okay.
So we're not. But I think you're right about the ASCII 2 point, and I'll make sure to do that.
Ray actually has the data from Loveless, but he has said, I think Ray left. He said to us, where is he? What Ray said was that he wanted to check the data to make sure that it was finalized. I mean, I told Ray we're going to need to have the data when we take the tissues, because the data without the tissues is going to be, you know, pretty useless.
I don't know what you said. The current version. This is far we go. The current version, which in fact you could have it today if you wanted, although maybe we shouldn't tell Ray.
Please. Actually, we've been hoping to set up for the tissues to come so that we can actually look at the database and figure out exactly what we're going to have. And Ray keeps telling me that he's not sure what he has is accurate. But if you believe what you have, we'll take it.
I have the current version.
Great.
And that's, as far as I can tell, that's as good as it's going to get, because all of the people, or most of the people that created that, are not active anymore.
Great.
And it is both in both in access and in ASCII.
Great.
I've got both. Great. I've also got a couple of other databases that you might want that I don't know whether anybody has offered to you yet or not.
No, we'll take them. We'll take whatever we can get.
Okay. Yeah, I don't have it. I don't think I have it. No, I don't have it in my pocket, but it's up in my room.
Okay.
That would be great.
Thank you.
Chuck, you're up, and then down the road.
I'm in trouble with Ray.
Oh, sorry, Bill.
Okay.
I want to go back to allowing access to the
mic.
Database. Is it on? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
No. Yeah. No.
Try this other one.
Hello?
How about that?
Mr. President.
Can you hear me now? Now, I would certainly encourage controlling the access to our databases. You know very well, and I agree with Roger, 100% certainty that sometime somebody down the road is going to come up with 15,000 beagles and make a big issue of it. We've been very fortunate here. We've been protected by P&L's, the public relations people. We've been very fortunate. I know things have happened over on the coast where things were not quite as well protected. And in that sense, since our data now is really in the hands of Washington State University, I don't have as much trust in their being able to protect us as P&L. We've had a few instances through the years. I think one of the most, several got a lot of publicity. One were Davis's pig dogs that came out and were buried, and somebody found them, and of course we got blamed for them until we got it straightened out. Jim Park and I lost 5 alligators in Columbia River one time. and for 6 months I had a crew out searching for alligators along the Columbia River. We only found 4 of them, so there's one more still out there someplace. our staff were coached to be very prudent in what they communicated to the media. So we've been fortunate here, but you know you can't count on that happening all the time. So.
How about down here?
One thing I'd like to caution you about with regard to digitizing all of the annual reports and the technical information is that frequently the data that you'll get there might look final, but it isn't final. It's an interim value, which later got adjusted. And so one must play this caveat emptor bit and realize that in cases of the data itself, in an ongoing study, it oftentimes it's not the correct final value there. And to follow up on Roger's monkey story, I can't resist telling you that time in the 60s at 2 o'clock in the morning, the police department called me up. My lab was right in the middle of a university campus and said, you know, there's dogs all over the place. You think you ought to come out here. So somebody had scaled the fence, cut open the lock, and opened all the dog pen cages. And I had 1,000 beagle dogs marching around the southern end of campus. Now, these animals had been in solitary confinement and celibate all of their lives. And I said, oh, my God, we're going to have a breeding colony. Well, would you believe it? All of the dogs were so afraid of the outside that they were all very close to the thing. We got them all herded back in. They had ear tattoos, so we knew who was who. And it didn't lose a single dog, and there were no conceptions as a result of that evening. They were just so afraid of being outside away from their pens. But I must tell you, that phone call really was a wake-up call for me, and I heeded very carefully Roger's advice about a contingency plan. It did get written up in the local Empty Prize, our newspaper, but there were no bad results. But when you mix the word plutonium and the word beagle together, you guarantee that it's not whether, it's when that you'll have to cover this. And so, thank you.
Your mention of that story, we'll tell you another one. We, when I was early days, we used to have miniature pigs. Now, we worked with the miniature pigs, and at some cases, we just had some excess ones. I don't know what time of the budget year or whatever. The decision was made that these were going to be taken to the local sales arena. And, of course, they looked like they were about normal sorts of pigs. You know, they weighed about 200 pounds, only these were full-grown. You know, they weren't going to grow anymore. Well, some guy bought them at a low price, and he was convinced that one of them looked like a good breeder. What he didn't appreciate, it was vasectomized. And so we got an irate call after some period, some months, because he was concerned that we'd sold that pig under false pretenses. He'd never seen a pig like that. Looked like he's fully intact, but he certainly couldn't breed because he's vasectomized. But the other publicity story, Bill early on was doing studies in smoking in beagle dogs, and I guess the PR people kind of got turned loose, and there was actually a story in the local paper, and it showed, was it Wilbur, your one of the best animal technicians that Bill had, and I don't think he got any adverse publicity except his children were very upset to know that he was teaching those dogs how to smoke.
Do you still have a comment, Mike?
Get access to the alligator store, and that made the headlines. This was back in the days when GE was our contractor, and it just so happened there was a vice president from GE in town, and as soon as that hit the newspapers, he could see the sales of refrigerators going right down to two. So that's what caused the whole ruckus.
All right.
Yeah, I just wanted to remind everyone again about the annual versus the technical reports.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think that when everyone is talking about annual reports, that they're intending to say technical report as well, because that's really where the data is. The annual report is going to be just a summary of the study, and it's the technical reports that are going to have the data and really the details of that study in it.
Yeah, Tom might know more about that with the Argonne work. Do you know if there were technical reports at Argonne that we need in addition to these annual ones?
I don't think there was anything relevant to beagles.
At Argonne, it was annual reports plus papers that were published. I don't think that works.
We'll keep track of that for the other archives. Yeah.
I just wanted to make a comment that I would hate to see the group photo that I helped organize yesterday on the as a wanted poster on the PETA website. So I would suggest that we not forward either the photo or this list to anybody adversarial. Because, I mean, this has got people's home addresses on it. So.
Yeah, that's a good point. Bill, did you still have a comment there? Is that it?
Let me say a few words. 1 minute. I like your screen. It's going to change.
Sorry. Those are my llamas.
So I just thought I'd finish up on a little bit lighter note. Spelling. There is no Q in Ecuador, and I go this direction. Oh, that's not going to do it, is it?
That's the one on the right.
Okay, so we've retired. We live in Cuenca in Ecuador, and people have been asking me, where is it? So the two arrows are where you know. The top arrow is Quito. The bottom arrow is Guayaquil. And Cuenca is in the mountains there. whoops, wrong direction. And I'm just inviting you to come on down. We had, the first year we were there, we had 28 people come and stay in our home, and many of them had never even had a passport. And I know you all have passports, so feel free to come on down. We can do this in our patio any day of the year. The weather is always perfect. And then I invite you to look at my wife's blog, which has that address. And if you're really bored, you can go back 2 or 3 years and read all the fun things we've been doing since we went down there. Any questions?
Yes. Go back to the map.
Oh.
Radiation question.
Where's the equator with a Q?
The equator is just above Quito.
Okay.
That's
the line that we see?
Yeah, that's the line. And it's like 45 minutes by taxi from Quito. Oh, it's cheaper to fly into Guayaquil. Either way, you have to stay in a hotel the night you get there and then fly to Cuenca. Unless you want to fly on the red eye out of Los Angeles that leaves at 2 in the morning, then you can get to Ecuador at 3 in the afternoon, but I've only done it once. Never again.
Is there any beagle research going on in Ecuador?
Any what?
Any beagle research going on in Ecuador?
No, but in Ecuador, we eat the guinea pigs.
Touché.
In Korea, they would have eaten the beagle. So, yeah. So I just wanted to sort of wrap it up. You know, a lot of us have considered what we would, you know, a path forward. Well, it isn't going to be a path forward unless we get some funding. We've got one more year, and then we're done. That our whole program is going to be down the tubes unless we get some funding in a year. I don't know, Gail's in a lot better shape than we are. So if anybody has any thoughts on, we had some discussion about this, but as I said, you saw what happened to the program 20 years ago, and it doesn't look any brighter at the moment, and given the economy, I just don't see where it's going to go. We've all heard what the troubles and tribulations that Tony's having. So I don't really think it's worth spending any time on a path forward. However, what Bill and Tony and Sergey and I will talk about on Monday is maybe coming up with a meeting report on this. I'd like to have some sort of publication, unless you think it's going to inflame the crazies out there and they're going to worry about the dogs. I think it'd be worth putting something out in a journal for this. I will make sure you all get a copy of the photo. For those of you that have taken photos and would like to share them with the group, can you send them to Sheila? She can put them on a disc and send them out as well. And that seemed to have worked pretty well in the past. And unless there are any questions, yeah, Marv.
I'd say that since Tom is right, that there may not be another congregation of survivors, it would be useful, in addition to putting out a little summer report, if we could have copies of the view graphs that were presented and sort of a summary of the meeting here. That would sort of document where we were and some of the opportunities that might lie ahead as an individual, on an individual basis, even if not for a programmatic basis.
So let's think about the logistics of doing that. Unless I can con Tony and Bill.
Everybody gave you copies of
the view graphs.
PowerPoints, I think.
We have those, and is everybody okay that I take a look at them as we put this together? So unless anybody has any objections, I'll do that. And we can work on that as a framework for this. And we'll put a participant list in as well.
And maybe you and Bill could sort of write a couple of, maybe one pager on the highlights of what we discussed.
Exactly. That's what I think we'd do. We'd like to make it more than a page. I think there's a lot of really great information for us, and I think it's a great way of advertising the Janus site as well. Jeff?
Can we get a copy of the movie that's being made as well?
You know, ask the Japanese.
Oh, the movie.
Bill, I think we're coming to the end. Certainly, as one of the participants, want to thank you and your colleagues for your great organization of the meeting and for your hospitality and for the most of all the initiative in pulling us together. I think it's done in the best of Hanford tradition, thinking back to the old Hanford Biology Symposium that we had and the great times associated with this. So this is, again, another landmark meeting, and thank you to you and your colleagues.
Sorry?
Is this going to be a paper report or just send it electronically to the people
here? Yeah, we'll send it electronically to people, and then we'll get your input, and then we'll submit it. Okay. Gail?
So I would like to thank everybody who ever worked on these Beagle studies who came to this meeting. I mean, I'm optimistic that we will at least get the databases put together, and we will get stuff put together for this. And I'm going to be depending upon people in this room to continue to help. And I just want to thank you all because, I mean, I don't know. I don't want to be so negative. Maybe we will get together a year from now. Maybe we'll get together in the future. I think it's a bad thing to say that this is the last meeting. Maybe that's the truth, but maybe not. Let's hope for the best.
Right. Well, maybe just finishing up by acknowledging Lainey and Sheila for all the help. They did the work. And thank you all for coming to Richland. I know it's not the easiest place to get to, but for us it's been great. We really like it. We don't have to travel. And we really appreciate you all making the effort to come here. So on behalf of all of us, thanks very much, and I hope we'll see you again next year. We'll see. Thank you to Dave, who always does a great job with the sound for us. It's always tough, but he does a great job. Thanks, Dave.